The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. Our first article is from the New York Times. Is this the year Laos breaks through? The Southeast Asian country has lagged behind Vietnam and Thailand when it comes to tourism. The government hopes new hotels, roads, and a train system will put Laos on visitors' lists. By Christine Chung, January 1, 2025. Laos, a place that feels stuck in time, is at the precipice of change. Backpackers found the country decades ago, drawn by staggeringly beautiful limestone mountains, elaborate Buddhist temples, and an unhurried and inexpensive pace of life. Only the most intrepid travelers followed, as Laos, Southeast Asia's only landlocked country, operated few and no long-haul flights, and potholed and shoddy roads were the norm. Those who made it traded no-frills accommodations and hours-long bumpy drives for adventure, and almost always tacked Laos onto multi-country itineraries that included neighboring Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam, all well-oiled tourism machines that each draw at least three times the number of visitors that Laos annually has. Laos wants to change that. While flights remain limited, the country's visitor infrastructure has strengthened in recent years, with new hotels, improved highways, and, most notably, a new train system that runs as fast as 160 kilometers, 100 miles per hour, and connects some of the country's most popular tourism destinations. Last year, the government designated 2024 a national tourism year, expanding visa waivers, improving tour guide training, and holding dozens of grand festivals. Yet the country and its tourism industry were shaken in November when at least six young tourists fell ill in the town of Vang Vieng and later died. Officials suspect methanol-tainted alcohol is the cause. I had visited Vang Vieng in July when my partner Eli and I set out for a week-long trip in Laos. We had wondered what it would be like to visit a country on the cusp of a potential tourism boom, particularly one with a long-standing reputation as an inexpensive, under-the-radar destination. We traveled mostly by rail, but also by bus to find out. The Lao-China Railway, a new route to old favorites. Laos, which is roughly twice the size of Pennsylvania, has been trying to build back the record tourism numbers it reached in 2019, when 4.8 million foreign tourists visited. This year, according to the Lao government, it succeeded, with more than 5 million tourists visiting. The Lao-China Railway, which runs from Vientiane, the capital of Laos, to Kunming in southern China, is key to the momentum. The $6 billion project, financed by China, is part of China's Belt and Road Initiative that aims to connect countries across five continents. Laos is a key hub for China to reach the rest of Southeast Asia. The Lao-China Railway opened in late 2021 for journeys within Laos, and cross-border train service between Laos and China began in 2023. Laos, a one-party communist state, has strong ties with China and is deeply reliant on Chinese investments to fund its infrastructure projects. The semi-high-speed train will whisk you to cities and towns with dramatically different landscapes in just an hour or two, replacing the car or bus rides that used to take all day. The train now offers seamless journeys to Vientiane, the most industrial part of Laos, and where malls and temples coexist, to Luang Prabang, a UNESCO World Heritage Site with dozens of elaborate Buddhist temples and elegant French colonial villas, and to Vang Vieng, an outdoor adventure hotspot where tourists explore the area's craggy limestone mountains, caves, and lagoons, and dance until the early morning at raucous bars. The railway is a tourism attraction itself. Its behemoth stations feature peaked red roofs and cavernous waiting rooms full of hundreds of people lining up to board trains. During our trip, they departed right on the dot, but the stations almost seemed like they were in a soft opening. In Vientiane, the vending machine was empty, and businesses on the second floor had yet to open. The train zips through verdant farmland and swampy rice paddies, and into the darkness of mountain tunnels. The fare is affordable. A 2-hour ride from Luang Prabang to Vientiane cost under $20. But only those with local phone numbers can purchase a ticket on the train's app. The rest have to use middlemen services, easily available online, or wait in line. Hotels can generally also help arrange rail service. At the Vang Vien station, I met Cheryl Lau, a 68-year-old retiree from Honolulu, who was en route to Luang Prabang. Though she frequently travels abroad to Japan, she said going to Laos initially felt out of her comfort zone. "It wasn't an easy decision. I am by myself and I'm older," Ms. Lau said, adding that she was encouraged after researching online. "I don't think I would have done it without the train. I'm loving it right now." Gilded temples and riverside bars. I found the train to be an almost effortless way to travel through Laos and experience the country's very different lifestyles. In Vientiane, we walked through gilded temples, stayed in old French colonial villas, and strolled by the Mekong River at night, where an amusement park, night market, bars, and open-air restaurants with seafood on ice welcomed patrons. While we had many fantastic and affordable meals throughout the trip, the best was at Doi Ka Noi, a convivial restaurant where the seasonal menu changes weekly. We paid about $30 for lunch for two. Their crispy rice salad, featuring sour pork and loaded with fragrant herbs, is reason enough to visit to Vientiane. Other highlights included a visit to Ok Pop Talk, a textile collective based in Luang Prabang, where we watched artisan weavers hard at their craft. In Vang Vieng, we booked an excursion with Green Discovery, a local tour operator. We paddled kayaks on the Nam Song River and went tubing in a cave. Vang Vien has long had a reputation as a party spot, a destination of dangerous hedonism even, for international backpackers seeking drugs and alcohol. In recent years, officials tried to tamp down the partying, closing many of its riverside bars after dozens of fatal tubing accidents. When the 6 travelers sickened there last fall and later died, the town made international news. At least 8 hostel workers, according to local press reports, were arrested and detained by police in connection to the death. Shifting patterns? Aside from the train, new highways have begun replacing once treacherous roads ridden with potholes. In well-trodden areas, tour operators and services are abundant, and even in sleepier places, I saw numerous hotels under construction. At the Kwan Si Waterfall, a multi-tiered waterfall with startlingly aquamarine waters south of Luang Prabang, there's golf cart service to the parking lot and a new zip line winding through the forest. A sturdy metal staircase to the base of the waterfall has replaced a series of decrepit and slippery wooden stairs. In 2024, major hotel brands, including DoubleTree by Hilton, the Easton, and the Holiday Inn, open locations in Vientiane, a vote of confidence in the country and its growing tourism demand. We stayed at the Setha Palace Hotel, two nights, $240, a boutique hotel built by the French in the 1930s and later restored by a Lau family. Its rosewood furnishings, including stately four-poster beds and marble floors, made us feel like we were in a time warp. We took breaks from the city's swampy humidity in the hotel pool, which was ringed by a lush garden. But the center of luxury travel in Laos is undoubtedly Luang Prabang. Amataka, an Aman Group resort, opened more than a decade ago, and in 2018, Rosewood Hotel Group opened an opulent 23-room resort on a secluded property. Travelers, too, are becoming increasingly aware of Laos and its allure. While it remains sought after as an add-on for other Southeast Asia itineraries, interest in Laos is rising, said Heather Heverling, a managing director at Audley Travel, a tour operator based in Britain. From January to October 2024, the company's bookings quadrupled compared to the same period in 2022. It used to be that travelers really just went to Luang Prabang and that was it, said Catherine Held, a co-founder of Remote Lands, a New York-based travel agency that exclusively works in Asia. It's a more viable destination now. Like Ms. Lau, the retiree from Honolulu, who I met in Van Vien, most travelers I encountered weren't only targeting Laos. Ms. Lau was also visiting Thailand on her trip. This phenomenon is likely driven in part by the country's lesser-known reputation and the fact that international travelers from outside the region must first connect at airports in cities like Bangkok and Hanoi. And those flights to Laos are limited. In 2024, there were fewer than 1.8 million airline seats to Laos, most of them offered by Chinese and Thai airlines, according to Cirium, an aviation data company. By comparison, more than 46 million seats were available to Thailand. Laos has always been a plus-one country, said Jason Rowland, a tourism expert who lives in Vientiane. Its remoteness has kept it sort of preserved as something tourists want to see, but they don't know about it. Off the train and on the bus to Nong Khia. With just 2 days remaining, Eli and I visited Nong Khia, a rural town that was a three-hour drive from Luang Prabang. Enticed by pictures and reviews online, we decided to spend a night there. The journey was deeply uncomfortable. We were crammed in a small van with about a dozen sweaty people sitting thigh to thigh. There was no air conditioning. The temperature was around 90 degrees, and only the suggestion of a breeze. Portions of the roads were unpaved and filled with ditches. I really missed the train, but it was worth it. Nong Khia's limestone karst landscape loomed over the placid Nam U River, where water buffalo rested languidly on the riverbanks. We barely saw anybody else there. It was also extremely cheap. Comfortable lodging throughout Laos is generally under $100. In Nong Khia, we paid $32 for a night at the Nong Khia Riverside, a charming riverside hotel that had an excellent restaurant serving fresh spring rolls and noodle soup. The experiences we had there were the best ones of the trip. Eli embarked on a steep, hour-long trek up to an overlook called Pha Dang Peak and enjoyed sweeping, panoramic views of mountains ribboned with mist and the curving Nam U River. I crossed a rickety bridge through a rice paddy to visit Tam Pha Tok, a cluster of caves where villagers hid during the Vietnam War. One night, we went to Hive Bar, a drinking spot beloved by tourists. I asked Tieng Sudakong, the bar's owner, how he felt about the tourism changes and burgeoning development. He welcomed the train, he said, but Nong Kia was different from other tourism spots, and he hoped it stayed that way. We still have more nature, and it's a peaceful, quiet place. No big hotels and hostels, no traffic here yet, he said. The tourists here prefer a bumpy road like this. They don't need prosperity or civilization in their holiday. They spend their lives closer to locals. It's this feeling that lured Nabi El Nasran back to Laos after his first visit 6 years ago. I met Mr. Nasran, a bartender from Singapore, on the van to Nong Kia, as he was backpacking through Thailand, Laos, and Vietnam with his girlfriend Selena. Mr. Nasran, 27, remarked that the ride to Nong Kia was better because the road's condition had improved. Laos felt busier this time around, he said, especially in Van Vien and Luang Prabang, but the country still had an undeniably peaceful and remote atmosphere. People have always said this is the last frontier of Southeast Asia, he said. I just love the quiet life here. That was Is This the Year Laos Breaks Through? By Christine Chung, January 1st, 2025. Our next article is also from the New York Times. Along the Mekong River, a timeless place where time marches on. An ancient Khmer temple's restoration draws adventurous tourists to a little-known corner of Southeast Asia. By Edward Wong, April 4, 2017. Deep in the folds of the hill, up steep stone stairs, flanked with frangipani trees, stood the inner sanctum of the ancient Khmer temple of Wat Phu. We faced the mountain ridge, our backs to the waters of the Mekong River, looking for the chamber. From this angle, it was hidden, but other parts of the temple had begun revealing themselves to us. Down here, along the rutted stone path leading to the stairs, we watched as a construction crane lifted a block onto the wall of one of the outer chambers. To our right, a few carvers chipped away at other blocks with small tools. Through their hands flowed the tales of Hindu mythology, the millenniums-old narratives of gods and love and war that had originated on the Indian subcontinent and traveled to distant Java and to Khmer temples across Cambodia and Laos. Now the transmission of stories and beliefs and ideas was continuing here, like the flow of the Mekong and the shadow of one of the most beautiful of those temples. Built more than 1,000 years ago, at the high point of an axis stretching from a range of mountains down to the Mekong, Wat Phu is one of the most sacred temples of the vanished Khmer kingdoms. The Khmer ruled a wide swath of Southeast Asia from the 9th to the 15th centuries, and their dedication to art and architecture is best embodied in the famous temples of Angkor Wat in Cambodia. Lesser known and distinct from Angkor in its intimacy is Wat Phu, sometimes written in English as Wat Phu, which has been designated a World Heritage Site by United Nations Agency. To see the temple in this stretch of the Mekong, my wife, 3-year-old daughter, and I based ourselves for 3 nights at a new riverside hotel outside the town of Champasak. This was the middle leg of a 3-country whirlwind trip through Southeast Asia that we regarded as our farewell to the region. I had been reporting in China for the New York Times for 8 years, and we had plans to leave in the coming year. We had a special attachment to Southeast Asia. My wife, Tini, is Vietnamese-American, and worked for 7 years for the Associated Press in Vietnam before moving to China. And while in China, as a couple and then a family, we had spent much of our vacation time exploring the region. For many foreigners and Chinese ground down by living in China's polluted, crowded, and clogged megacities, the beaches, rivers, and hills of tropical Southeast Asia provided a much-needed escape hatch. Neither Tini nor I had been in southern Laos before, so it made sense to choose it as a centerpiece of our final Southeast Asia vacation on this tour. Even if Laos was an authoritarian state, it was still the land of the Mekong, with palm trees lining the riverbanks, freshwater dolphins swimming between islets, and fishermen casting nets over the side of skiffs. The pace of life was slower, much slower, than that of Beijing. But it would have been wrong to think of the region as timeless. The restoration of that Fu that we witnessed belied notions of ancient ruins lost in eternal mists. And it was there, near the entrance to the temple complex, that we discovered we were not the only escapees from the rush of development in China. As we set foot that morning on the eastern end of the pathway leading up to the inner sanctum, we met a Chinese couple from Shanghai who were in the middle of a month-long trip through Laos with their 6-year-old daughter. Our daughter, Aria, instantly began following the older girl around. We told the family we were fleeing the notorious Beijing pollution. "The situation is very bad in Shanghai, too," the father said. It was rare to see a Chinese family traveling alone in this corner of Southeast Asia, and I wondered whether they were a harbinger for a new wave of tourists. French travelers were ubiquitous here, and had been so for more than a century, given France's colonial history in so-called Indochina. But Chinese travelers were rare, even though China bordered Laos. We had begun our 2-week trip with a flight from Beijing to Chiang Mai in Thailand to visit friends there, then entered southern Laos with a plan to spend 1 week before meeting other friends on a beach in Vietnam. We crossed the Thai-Laos border near the Laotian town of Pak Se. There, on a sleepy street — towns in Laos only have sleepy streets — we had lunch at Doc Mai, a restaurant run by an Italian, Corredo. He told us he had tried living and working in India, but that had been tough. "Pak Se chose me," he said. A young man sent from the river resort then drove us a half hour from Pak Se to the hotel built along the Mekong. We found ourselves in the middle of nowhere, but that was the point. The river resort consisted of 2-story luxury buildings along the west bank of the Mekong, with a large room on each floor. There were 2 riverside swimming pools on the grounds. We had a balcony room overlooking the river. The entire wall and door facing the river was made of glass. We would wake up in bed gazing across the waters to the sunrise. At sunset, a golden light bathed the river and trees and stones. It was one of the most stunning hotels in which we had stayed in Southeast Asia. We would have enjoyed spending an entire day just on the riverbank, but Khmer civilization beckoned us. In the mountains looming to our west, hidden by jungle, lay Vat Phu. The next morning, we hired a taxi to drive us the 15 minutes to the temple. Along the range of hills, we could make out one peak that stood above the others. The builders of Vat Phu had noticed this and proclaimed it a natural lingam of Shiva. A hotel employee, Thai, told me of the importance of rituals at the temple. "I've been to Vat Phu 4 times, he said. "My family goes once a year. Because I have to work, I usually don't go. I don't have much time, so I would only be able to go at night." "There's a big festival once a year," he said. "I remember there were many people. This year there will be a big one, and maybe I'll have to go." After we met the family from Shanghai, We walk between rows of trees and up the stone steps to the inner sanctum. Along the main walkway, we passed a seven-headed Naga statue draped with yellow garlands. A bell rings somewhere. Inside the inner temple, a Thai family made offerings to a statue of the Buddha. They had bought incense sticks from a woman outside the temple. They prayed with the lit sticks. Sweet smoke drifted through the temple. On our walk, Arya had picked up a white Ranjapani flower, and now she placed it on a wooden table atop dried candle wax. It was her offering. Around the sanctum were lintels carved with ornate scenes from Hindu mythology. One showed the god Indra atop a three-headed elephant. Another depicted deities taking part in the churning of the ocean of milk, an image that I had also seen a decade earlier at Angkor. Then there was the scene of Krishna tearing his uncle Kamsa in half. Outside, more worshippers were arriving. We walked along the slope of the mountain behind the temple. On the site were the ruins of a small library, a sacred spring, and a cave shrine. At a cistern, Laotians anointed themselves with water that flowed from mountain springs. The Shanganese girl told us to follow her, and she showed us a crocodile-shaped rock that our guidebook said might have been used for human sacrifices before the Age of Angkor. It was the wider natural surroundings that cast a spell on us. Atop the hill, staring down the axis and toward the Mekong to the east, I could see the many Ranjapani flowers below, bursts of white on the brown landscape. The temple commanded the scene, as its cousins at Angkor did in the Cambodian jungles. After we walked down the stairs, four women holding umbrellas approached us. They went straight up to Arya and said, "Sabadi," or hello. She said it back, pronouncing the syllables carefully, even if she did not know what the word meant. The next morning, we arranged with our hotel to take a boat over to the island of Don Deng, in the middle of the Mekong. We had brought bicycles with us, and I strapped Arya to my back with a baby sling. A herd of water buffalo wandered languidly down the sandy beach to drink at the river. We biked along dirt paths to villages. There were five main ones on the island, with a total population of 3,000. Locals walked from one to another or sat on the rear of trundling tractors. Outside their homes, women fried up rice cakes in pans. At lunchtime, we stopped at La Folie, a French-run colonial-style lodge. While our hotel was all modernist glass and concrete, La Folie had polished wooden panels on the floors and walls. It overlooked the river and faced the spine of mountains to the west. We could see Da Phu in the hills. Top, a smiling 29-year-old man from Pak Se, was working in the dining room. He had just started there 1 month earlier. When he found out I was from the United States, he asked about the Ultra Music Festival in Miami. Had I heard of it? Had I been there? I shook my head. "I really want to go," he said. "My favorite DJs from around the world go there." We will finish this article next week. That's all of our program for today. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. You can listen to this program on demand anytime at www.virginiavoice.org.